usually bang the gavel, but that was kind of satisfying.
Good morning, everybody. This is the Portland City Council hearing for Wednesday, September 25th, 2013. The mayor will be arriving shortly, but we have one thing before the gavel. Well, it was after the gavel, but after I brought it to your attention and before we call the roll. The City of Portland would like to recognize and welcome Oregon's Partners of the Americas. So please come forward to the table, Oregon Partners President Karen Graham.
Also coming with me is Edwin Araya. He is the leader of the group coming here to visit, and Oscar Arieta, who is the past president of Oregon Costa Rica in Costa Rica.
Welcome.
Partners started in 1964 as part of the Alliance for Progress, where parts of the U.S. were paired with parts of Latin America based on similar interests, and Oregon was lucky to be paired with Costa Rica because of our fisheries, forestry, ecotourism, and now we have intel in common as well. And so I'd like to introduce the other Costa Ricans and their American hosts. Would you please stand?
Welcome. Thank you for being here.
The Costa Ricans are here for a month, and they will be leaving Portland after a wonderful tour today and learning about city government here, to go to Salem, Bend, and Hood River. They hope to see snow and the changing leaves before they go home. So we thank you very much for your time and your consideration this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would you like to say add anything?
Would you like to say anything?
Un poquito. Buenos días. Agradecemos profundamente el grupo de costarricenses que hoy estamos aquí por recibirnos en este precioso lugar. Sentimos que
he's giving a very deep appreciation for receiving us and in this beautiful location.
Completamente agradecidos y llenos de verdaderamente de felicidad de haber conocido un lugar tan hermoso como este.
They're very happy to be able to see this beautiful place and share the time with you. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to our city and our city hall. Thank you very much for the presentation. And the mayor apologizes that he was not able to be here for that. So Carla, could you please call the roll?
Saltzman? Novick?
Aye.
Prince?
Here.
Fish?
I'm sorry, here.
Yeah. Hills?
And Commissioner Saltzman is on city business at the League of Oregon Cities. And we all appreciate his service on that committee. Please read the title for communications item 895.
Request of Pavel Goberman to address council regarding announcing his candidacy.
Yes, please come, Mr. Goberman. You just state your name for the...
I hear you in sound not very good.
Sound is not very good, so we'll see what we can do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Oh, now I hear good. Thank you for giving me opportunity. I will take glasses because you have no good light here. Okay, my name is Pavel Goberman. I live in Beaverton. It's too bad Mayor Hill's not here. Okay, on January 26, 2011, I was arrested in Portland building by Portland police and placed in jail. Why? What I did wrong? I don't know. I demand to investigate and not allow TriMet use city property. I have a plan to create a few million jobs in U.S. Balance budget, improve heavy traffic on all highway in cities. Therefore, announced with Federal Election Commission my candidacy for U.S. Senator against useless Merkley. By the way, in 2008, Sam did mock election, he elected me for U.S. Senator, but not Merkley. Also, to change the black robes of many United States and state judges to black and white robe for violation of the Constitution of the United States. It's supreme law of this country. Commissioner Novick, the media junta named you genius, and you named Merkley terrific. Senator Merkley bound by oath to support this constitution, but he violates our law, has no any respect, it does not support this constitution and code of ethics for government employee. And on base of Article 2 and 6, he must be removed from office. It does not qualify for any office. On September 19, 2013, I filed lawsuit with Federal United States District Court against Merkley. Merkley support crimes of United States District Court, answer Hagerty. And you, Mr. Novick, are in charge of Transportation Committee. I requested you to investigate why I was illegally terminated by TriMet, but you did nothing. Also, perform your job or leave this office. President of Oregon Public Broadcast, Mr. Bass, violated my freedom of speech, violated Constitution of USA. You, all of you, bonded by us to support Constitution. Just do your job. Oregon, remove practice, don't allow Oregon Public Broadcast practice business on city property. My message to Mayor Hales, appoint me as your advisor, and I promise to save city, create city a few thousand jobs, improve heavy traffic. Don't need spend money on Columbia River Cross. It's all, yeah? Oh, a couple minutes more.
No, you're done. That's it. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you. You have my paper here.
Thank you, Mr. Goberman. Item 896, please.
Request of Michael Krupp to address council regarding Blue Water PAC lobby.
Mr. Krupp? Yeah, I saw him.
Just commissioners. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm going to read to an empty chair then.
It'll be in the record, Mr. Krupp. Thank you. And if you could state your name as usual, you have 3 minutes.
As words of reason fail to pass your rudimentary reptilian ears, it becomes clear my purpose here is amplification of your stark naked personal ambition and insatiable greed. Having been given the pin for our city's treasury, you don't even pretend to represent our people's fiscal interests. The corrupt charter under which you function, riddled with loopholes, allows you to lie without fear of perjury, amply demonstrated by the angry Sam Adams, retired, and his buddy Randy Deep Pockets Leonard, who rode into the sunset on a stolen horse. And when advised by our ombudsman which of the projects to be undertaken by the city will be audited, dazzled by God money, it practically begs you to steal from the ones that won't be. You are only human. Of course, the temptations are inexorable. I ask you only do this. Stop. Thief. The vulture's nest view as chief executive of dialing for dollars is surely a heady experience. Up till now, a petty one corporation, military industrial crook, you seek to plummet our great city into a made-for-TV depression, ripe for rape. Piss on your plans to privatize. This is not the Roaring Twenties, and you're not Boss Tweed. The people are watching. We are not pleased. Even with your little whipping boy, the Oragoofnian, ringing your praise, it is clear to us that the sky is falling. If not a capital D democratic country, we remain a democracy. There are many of us fair-minded folk and few of you and yours. Go rob a plaid pantry like Senator Issa, not us. We, the many, are citizens of the United States of America. You are most assuredly a denizen of the unbridled snakes of Demonica. You disgust me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Moriarty.
Good morning, Mayor. Item 897, please.
Request of Mark Hoffhines to address council regarding ending the homeless occupation and end police aggressive tactics.
How are you doing, council? Morning. All right. So my name is Mark Hoffhines. I'm with UCARE, the founder. It is my pleasure to address the Portland City Council in regards to the homelessness issue. Here I will address many ethically valid issues involved and in turn offer some trustworthy and morally based of solutions. In prayer for greater solution for our dear citizens of Portland and the U.S. as a whole, let us be an example to the world and make a positive change for those in need, instead of the usual sweeping under the rug or injustices. Portland is the mecca for today's pioneers. They walk about among us, seemingly forgotten or looked down upon. To most, they appear as mere vagrants, not someone looking to find their place to settle. These pioneers carry with them their items required, let alone carried by the pioneers who founded this city and, mind you, this country. Those same items the city criminalizes for them to use in order to save themselves from suffering and even death. Tell those pioneers back then they were unable to do those activities and find your response to be what? I think that that would be obvious. Ask yourselves, what would you do if God puts you in our shoes? They are citizens just like you or I, rich or poor. Make no decision as to whether they are guaranteed the same protections as any of us under the Constitution. They most definitely are, regardless of race, religion, gender, or economic class. Make no mistake that it states we the people. We are the people, and very expressively and explicitly speaks about it. Where would you choose to sleep if you were out with the same people you punish, when all the shelter beds are full, pouring down rain for 6 months straight, and freezing temperatures that kill? How would you find work carrying your entire home on your shoulders and zero place to put it because there just aren't enough lockers or safe place to keep anything? That's all you have, and it just won't be there when you return. Take the roof from your home even and see how well you fare. Can you imagine, especially during acts of God, beyond your control? Did you know that the great number of drug users are only use in order to cope with having no way out? Open your eyes and most of all your hearts. Why don't you set aside the same amount of time you used to go to sporting events and boast on something more dire like getting to know some of those people you actually work for, citizens. We employ you as taxpayers in the city, state, and country. Are you for the people, or maybe we need to find us a new mayor and council that aren't just for the dollar signs? When was the last time you fed the homeless community? I never see that in the media.
Michael, you need to wrap up.
I got two more paragraphs, sir. You have failed miserably to fulfill your singular promise made to the media, to citizens of Portland, regards to homeless outreach and having even a minuscule amount of sympathy for those in need. Instead, you send the police bureau in an all-out attack after the homeless to intimidate and criminalize homelessness in order to oppress and repress them, using fear of violence and duress on a daily basis and nightly basis, especially when no one is around to hear our cries and pleas for help and actual justice from those who were sworn to protect. Where are those outreach workers that you tell the citizens and the media are going to assist? When will you stop lying to our community about how you are doing everything you can to assist? Is putting homeless through a living, breathing hell in Portland your goal? Putting them in jail or writing them prejudicial citations must be your actual plan to end homelessness or outreach plan. I invite you all and the community to join me and those suffering in poverty day by day to UCARE, United Coalition Against Repression for Equality, on Facebook. And in the community, Let us expose the truth that arises out of the travesties and inhumanities felt by our people. We are God's people and army against the oppressors. You and the police bureau are no better than the hypocrites and soldiers who persecuted Christ. End this war and persecution you bestow upon God's children. Stop forcing us to carry our own crosses in the form of burdens placed upon our lives, for God loves those who are weak, meek, and cast out by society like rodents. He made us into many nations and tribes so that we could come to know one another, not hate or fight one another. Do you fear God? If not, maybe it's time you should, because in God we trust.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you. Okay, next, please.
898, request of Bruce Feathers to address council regarding the city's fairness in dealing with a minority contractor.
Feathers, come on up.
Good morning. Top of the morning to you.
Good morning.
My name is, Bruce Feathers. I am CEO of Featherlight, a minority business enterprise for the past 16 years in this city. In 2007, this very body approved what's called a supplier diversity program, which is designed to increase procurement from minority women and emerging small businesses. This is the same program used by 75% of Fortune 500 companies. Why did they approve this? The findings of a city-sponsored committee involving city employees and community members, which I co-chaired along with the former director of purchasing, Jeff Baer, we discovered that of the $123 million of annual purchases made by the city, 0.24% was with state-certified MWESB firms. This, we thought, was a serious breach in the city's public proclamations versus the institutional roadblocks being created by staff. And I was here last month, and I mentioned I would be back because I don't believe you want to, and I certainly don't want to allow the celebration and adoration for last month's MLK Day turn a blind eye to the economic empowerment of small businesses, particularly minority businesses, which is another form of the civil rights era. To be sure, watch this. The city was allowing large first-tier companies to commit to using MWESB firms on their RFP submissions. They would receive extra points to win the bid. But later, they found ways to get rid of the MWESB firm, which obviously increased their profit. That was a going concern of activity that was happening. But as part of the supplier diversity program, Commissioner Leonard, and this is a copy of the resolution made a resolution that aborted that practice, but neither the supplier diversity program or the resolution was able to take full effect. You might ask why. Because of the FBI investigation and I'll close of Ellis McCoy's mishandling of smart meter contracts, which, by the way, was first reported by me in the media, which led to the launching of the FBI inquiry, it shut down all city communications as they cited FBI investigation. But in revenge and greed, McCoy and Calais President George Levy conspired and succeeded in getting rid of my contract that I had with Calais. The director of purchasing, Mr. Baer, was aware, but again, the FBI investigations halted it all. Consequently, today our firm is in debt and just a stiff breeze away from a going out of business sale. Now, just for the record, so we can record, I was a MWESB subcontractor to both Calais and Precise ParkLink, the two meter providers. For Precise, we warehouse the receipts that we use in our windshield and we deliver them to the city. We also participated in the upgrade contract where we upgraded 1,100 of the meters that are on the street. We hired two minority employees, trained them. They were full-time, making over $60,000 a year. It was a perfect model of what we want this program to work. That contract was over. The Calais side, which we invested tens of thousands of dollars in warehouse upgrades to maintain the meters, to provide storage for them and pre-delivery prep. So we were very involved in this contract. And as I close, I'm simply petitioning. There's $30,000 of unfulfilled contract that was with Calais that got lost in the shuffle that I didn't create. You didn't either, but it certainly was by the city. And I'm also seeking to be restored as a minority women emerging small business subcontractor on any upcoming, and I believe there's one being worked on, smart meter contract. Thank you very much.
Thanks for bringing this to our attention. Appreciate you coming. Thank you.
899, request of Robert E. Shannon to address council regarding transportation and parks in Portland.
Shannon, come on up. Morning.
Morning, commissioners and mayor. Yeah, I have two issues here. One is on Holgate Boulevard. Holgate between 92nd and 122nd has been closed. They told me yesterday, they called me since August. '09, and I don't know the reason why. Well, I mean, I know the reason why. The two outside lanes have been turned into bicycle lanes, and there's businesses along there are hurting. And it's, I'll probably read this off to you. City of Portland Commissioners, Holgate was built and funded by taxpayers' gasoline taxes as a four-lane road, heavily traveled not only by auto but buses. Two of these lanes have been sacrificed to bicycles that pay no taxes and are not licensed. Now, only has it disrupted the traffic flow, it also impaired business along the route. Some have complained during the Sam Adams administration, but to no avail. I feel this is unjust, and the bike should be have no preference over automobiles. I have spoke with Steve Novak staff, and they disagreed, saying no change will take place. Another article here on Lentz Park needs a porta potty room as the northwest corner of the park for visitors and ball players alike. They keep telling me they've done something there, but there hasn't been anything done. I mean, it's the northwest corner of the park. It's a pretty good sized park, you know. And anyway, I've been there during the summer and this fall, and there's been people playing ball out there, maybe 50, 60 or more people, you know. And there's no, the farthest one up on 92nd is quite a ways away. And I mean, there's no reason they couldn't put it in there at least temporary, and then if somebody needs to lock it up, somebody or the groundskeeper can come back and lock it or what, you know, if there's going to be vandalism. I've called your office I don't know how many times, and they just ignore me.
Mr. Shannon, can I just ask you a question? You're listed as having a Damascus, Oregon address. Is that your home?
Yes. I live in Clackamas County.
You live in Clackamas.
But I use the road all the time.
I understand. But do you or your family have a business in Portland?
No,
you have
no,
a business
no,
address?
No. No, I'm a retired teamster.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you use that park a lot, obviously.
Well, we go down there, and like in the summertime, there's a parking back there, and you can sit in the shade, you know, and watch them play ball and what have you.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's only fair that they put some facility there for the public. I mean, God, you get 50, 60, or how many people that come in there and picnic, too, you know, that kind of thing.
Well,
I think it's only fair they have something there.
Well, we appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
Pardon me?
We appreciate you bringing this to our attention. We try to make the street system and the park system work for everybody.
Okay.
It's
a
challenge. Thank you.
We did, Mayor, do a...
If anybody want a copy of this, I can leave you.
If you could leave that with Carl, that'd be great.
We previously did a master plan. Mr. Shannon... We previously did a master plan.
Oh, this is Stephen Novak here. Yeah. Pardon me?
I was going to say, the council previously adopted a new master plan for Lentz Park.
Yeah.
And we've been secretly hoping that a former park aide that used to work there would come to our rescue and help us fund it, a guy by the name of Phil Knight. But if that doesn't work, it is in the queue for a future bond measure.
It is.
I don't have any idea what they charge for one of them. I don't.
Yeah. Bill can afford it.
There is facilities up at the other end, but that's too far away.
It's a big park. You're right.
Thanks for your
time,
sir.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks. Yeah, do leave that with Carla for us. Thank
Pardon
you.
Me?
Do leave that with Carla for us,
okay,
if you
please.
Would. Thank you. Good. All right. We are to time certain number 900.
Do you want to do the consent agenda?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Did it again. Now, I think we've had a couple of requests to pull some things from consent. Is that right?
I have 911.
911. Okay.
Yep.
Any others? Then let's take a vote on the balance of the consent calendar.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, and we'll hold 911 until after the time certain's on the regular calendar. Item 900.
Accept report from Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee.
Mr. Mike Verbout is here, the chair of that committee, as well as other committee members, and Chad Stover from my staff. Welcome, and thanks for being here with us today. Important work you're doing.
Good morning.
Welcome. Chad, are you leading off?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mayor Hales. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Chad Stover. I'm a policy advisor to the mayor, assigned mostly to public safety. On December 1st, 2010, Portland City Council passed ordinance number 184274, ordering council to add new and amend existing city code provisions to address illegal gun use and violent gang activity in the city ordinance. It reads in part, "Now, therefore, the City Council directs a committee established by Council shall monitor the implementation and enforcement of the new firearm use hotspots code for Council. The committee will collect and analyze data to determine whether management of the hotspots, one, serves the safety needs of the community, two, is fair and equitable, three, has generated improper disparate treatment. The committee will report to Council every 6 months." Since that time, it's changed to every year, so this is now an annual report. The illegal use of firearms is a long-standing community problem in the United States and in Portland. Every year, more than 30,000 people in the United States are killed by guns and over 66,000 are injured by gunfire. In 2012, there were 12 homicides and 36 suicides involving guns, and in 2013, up through July 31st, there were 3 homicides and 19 suicides involving guns in Portland. Firearms are used in approximately 40% of the homicides in Portland. Close to half of the firearms used in unintentional shootings of children were acquired by children from their parents who left the firearms loaded and unsecured in a place accessible to children. The African-American community has seen the greatest toll in its youth as a result of illegal gun use. Young African-American males are killed by guns at a much higher rate than any other segment of the U.S. population, according to the Violence Policy Center 2007 report. Stolen guns represent a major risk to the community at large because they have, by definition, entered criminal hands, ensuring law enforcement's early awareness of every lost or stolen gun will enhance law enforcement's ability to recover those guns and reduce gun violence. To combat gun violence and gun deaths in Portland, Mayor Sam Adams pursued local policies and enforcement that limit the ability for individuals to use guns criminally. On December 1st, 2010, Portland City Council passed an ordinance enacting 3 new gun control laws and 5 changes to city code aimed at curbing gun violence, particularly among juveniles. The laws hold adults responsible if their guns get into children's hands, penalize gun owners who do not report the theft or loss of a firearm, and designate illegal firearm use hotspot zones that allow the city to exclude criminals from them. Implementation, stage 1. Upon adaptation of this ordinance, City Council established the Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee, known for this point forward as committee, to track the implementation and enforcement of the changes to city code and the enforcement of new firearms violations. The committee's role is to provide oversight on the 5 pieces of the illegal gun ordinance. This oversight includes determining whether available data supports the continued designation of illegal firearm use hotspots, assessing the use and need for this ordinance and making certain that there is no disparity of treatment as a result of this ordinance. Specifically, City Council asked the committee to collect and analyze data to determine whether implementation of the ordinance serves the safety needs of the community, is fair and equitable, and has generated improper disparate treatment. In addition to ensuring that implementation of the ordinance achieves the goals of the City Council without discriminatory practices, the committee can also make recommendations to change the policies they see fit. Committee reports. The first of these reports was accepted by City Council on August 10, 2011. Since that time, the committee has tracked and analyzed the Stage 1 implementation of the new legislation through the Portland Police Bureau in partnership with the district attorneys and mayor's offices. Stage 1 of the implementation has provided an opportunity for the Police Bureau to work with its own employees and public agency partners to determine the integration of new policy into an existing system of public safety. Implementation of these new laws is continually finessed based on the experience of the officers and agency partners enforcing the ordinance, as well as recommendations from the committee during this stage. At this point, Mayor and Commissioners, I would like to briefly introduce our committee. Mike Verbout is the chair. Dave Smith and Roseanne Lee, members from the Oversight Committee. And this year, we would also like to welcome and announce that we have two new members. Susanna Pai and Juan Muros are joining this committee as well. Unfortunately, they were not able to make it here today, but we would like to make that formal announcement that they are joining the committee. And we also have two departing members. We want to thank Timo Alvarado, as well as Galina Caroline Easterly, who served on the committee in years past. In addition to our Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee members, also serving as committee staff and advisory members is myself, Chad Stover, work for the mayor's office, and Sergeant Kathy Kent of the Portland Police Bureau Gun Task Force, Lieutenant Art Nakamura, Portland Police Bureau's Gang Enforcement Team and Gun Task Force, and Deputy District Attorney Eric Zimmerman, who are here this morning. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mike Verbout, of our committee chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning, Mayor and President of the Council and Commissioner Novak. I'd like to thank the liaison to the committee, Chad, who has done a superb job in assisting the committee members. Also to the support staff. When, as citizens, we agreed to serve in this capacity, we promised then and continue to promise to you that we will be our own people and call things the way that we see them. We feel that's the best way to be helpful to you. And then, of course, you are able to decide what you agree with or what you don't agree with or however you'd like to proceed. But we do want to pledge to you again that we will serve you as our own independent individuals and give you the best counsel and advice that we can do. You have in front of you, but I would also like to make an announcement so that those who are listening or might hear is that this oversight committee meets on the third Tuesday of each month, 11 a.m. at the North Precinct. We have always had and will continue to have an open-door policy and welcome anyone who would like to come and attend and participate and make comments and make suggestions to feel free to attend and to be of assistance to us in this process. Also, in that we may not be reading all of what is in the documented material. These are public record, and anyone can access and obtain these materials. The committee examined in this latest report an implementation of four of the five portions of the illegal gun use ordinance. We looked at the illegal firearm use hotspots areas. We looked at endangering a child by allowing access to a firearm. We looked at failure to report theft or the loss of a firearm and possession of a loaded firearm in a public place. For this report, the committee did not examine the implementation of the amended curfew section of the city code. However, the committee plans to review information on the implementation of a more restrictive curfew as it becomes available. The majority of this report is devoted to the analysis of the illegal firearms use hotspots Supportive statistical information can be found in the exhibits to this report, as well as the graphs and figures cited throughout the body of this report. It's our intention to share with you the four areas that we looked at, and then the second phase will be a question and answer time in which staff will assist us from the Bureau and from the District Attorney's Office. It's a pleasure to introduce to you Dave, who is going to share our findings and our thoughts regarding the illegal firearms use hotspots. Dave.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Dave Smith, and as a volunteer, I am the president of Madison South Neighborhood Association. I coordinate a community policing program that we call EPIC, East Precinct Involved Citizens. And I also am the president of a 501c3 nonprofit called ASHA Inc., which is a spinoff of the Portland Police Bureau Bangladesh program that the mayor's office supports, which I would like to thank you for. In a relationship to the Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee, three original illegal firearms use hotspots, we call them hotspots, were designated as such in 2010 based on historic rates of gun crimes within those boundaries. These include crimes that can be specifically attributed to the illegal use of firearms, including aggravated assaults and attempted murders with a firearm and shots fired called, as well as anecdotal evidence from Portland police, sworn personnel, street-level gang outreach workers, staff at the district attorney's office, and crime prevention specialists. For this report, the committee examined the same inputs of information for the same hotspots as the 2012 report to determine whether the designation of these hotspots continued to be warranted in 2013. To compare appropriate information, the committee looked at the concentration of gun crimes in these areas from 2012 and matched that data with the same areas up through July 31st of 2013. Based on this data and updated anecdotal evidence, the committee made the following findings about each of the current hotspots. Downtown, the committee voted unanimously to maintain the designation. Gun crimes increased 1% since 2012, mostly happening between the hours of 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. around bars. Anecdotally, police have found more guns on female suspects and more guns in cars in this area over the past 2 years. Portland Police Bureau is working with bar owners and security staff throughout the summer to ensure continued safety. The nature of this location as a place for congregation and entertainment, coupled with the continuation of crime, lead the committee to determine that people who commit gun crimes should continue to be excluded from this hotspot. I-5 corridor, the committee voted unanimously to maintain this designation also. Gun crimes decreased 2% since 2012, but data shows that problems still are centralized over the Albina-Killingsworth area. Gang enforcement team and crime prevention anecdotal evidence have demonstrated that there are many gunshots fired at residences within this area. The 160th and Stark committee voted unanimously to maintain the designation. While the percentages are low for this hotspot, this is a geographically smaller area, so the concentration is high. Gang outreach receives a high number of calls to this area. Anecdotal evidence suggests gun and gang violence within this hotspot. A self-initiated activity by police in this area is higher than in other parts of town. So the committee's recommendations, the committee recommends an extension of the boundary of this particular hotspot to 181st, which crosses the Portland-Gresham boundary. Evidence suggests that there is a high frequency of gun activity along the max line that runs there, also allowing for the transportation of guns. The committee further suggests that the Portland City Council work in partnership with the City of Gresham in this area. I know that's a bit of a challenge, but that is a recommendation.
Can I just interrupt you and ask a question about that?
Yes.
I thought when we first did this that there was a challenge having the boundary go over, and we amended the hotspot so it didn't go over. Or am I thinking of a different process?
You may be thinking of a different prospect. To our knowledge, the recommendation was made. Work has been initiated with the Gresham, the District Attorney's Office, and the Police Bureau, but that would actually require an ordinance from the City of Gresham to coordinate. We realize that that is a challenge, but it is a challenge that we would like to offer to the council, because our experience is that those people who are committing gun crimes in that area can easily go into between the various boundaries and escape.
So you would like Mayor Hales to work with Mayor Bemis to do an ordinance to establish the hotspot policy?
We would like that very much, yes.
Okay, thank you.
That is our recommendation.
Okay. So, Commissioner, if I could just say one thing on that. So as this committee looked at recommendations throughout this report, what we really tried this year, and this is the third report to council, and so the first couple years we were, I think, really trying to get our bearings, trying to find the right areas for data collection and measurement. And coming in this year, we worked really hard to take data from last year so that we have a good apples-to-apples comparison from last year. So some of the things that may have been recommended before, we're noting that they're still of concern and that we are still recommending them and that further action be taken.
Some of the things we can just do, and some of them we have to ask Gresham to do.
Yeah, and we need the cooperation of the DA.
And we acknowledge that, but we strongly recommend that because we see it impacting what our mission and goal is. And y'all are so astute at these things, we have no doubt that it will probably come to fruition.
Thanks for the confidence.
I have just two more brief items to refer to in terms of hotspots. We think that focus should be placed on specific hotspots within the larger designated I-5 corridor hotspot due to the large size. So, and also, it is recommended that the I-5 corridor hotspot boundary be extended to include 33rd, but maintain the current north-south boundaries to include Woodland Park and Northeast 15th and Killingsworth. Thank you.
Ms. Lee?
And I would like to now introduce Roseanne Lee.
Hi. Good morning, Commissioner and Mayor. Section I'm going to talk about is the part of endangering a child by allowing access to a firearm. And this is on page 14 of the report, if you have it. The legislation was enacted to prevent and hold adults accountable for shootings, accidental shootings of youth, including suicide. Our local and national statistics about this tragic consequences of gun negligence continue to validate the need for legislation in the city code. Looking at our statistics, over half, sometimes as much as two-thirds, of the suicides in Oregon are accidental gun deaths are suicides by young people under the age of 17. So this portion of the ordinance hold adults accountable for the actions of juveniles, also in their, let me state that one over. This portion of the ordinance also holds adults accountable for the actions of juveniles within their care related to their firearms. It is extremely difficult for the Portland Police to identify adults responsible when juveniles are willingly seeking out or using firearms. In the cases that involve juveniles in possession of a firearm, the weapon does not belong to the juvenile's parent, so there's some other adult involved. And based on anecdotal evidence from the Police Bureau and street gang outreach, establishing reckless intent by the parent or the adult in this case is difficult. Is A, parents are not going to, they're going to say that they didn't know. And second, youth charged with gun crimes don't tell officers where they got the gun. And third, even if a juvenile claimed he or she acquired the gun from a specific adult, it's difficult to prove without the admission of the adult in question. And then on the suicide end of things, you know, people need to lock their guns up more securely than putting them on the top shelf of a closet or a bedroom drawer or under the bed, especially if you have teenagers, especially if you have a family member with mental illness. They need to be locked up more securely or stored at another location. I'll have to say that's my personal opinion. The community assessment is, as previously stated, the importance of this legislation is to target accidental shootings and negligent gun storage. The committee concludes that this portion of the ordinance acts as a deterrent for accidental gun injuries and deaths and supports its continued implementation. We have only one case this year that comes under this section, and it was the 11-year-old out in the East Portland area near in the hotspot out there, and it was his father's gun. So even though that one did not go to court as under this ordinance because he was a felon, he shouldn't have had a gun in the first place, it went to federal court, and I'm not quite sure how that one turned out, but DA Zimmerman probably could tell you. That's my section. Thank you.
Questions for our committee members or for Chad?
I'm going to go back to here.
Anything else that you need to cover before we bring up our other resource people here?
I'm sorry, Commissioner. I think we just have a couple more sections we just want to briefly go through, and then we'll go to the question.
All right, good. Answer, yeah. I wasn't sure if you were going to re-rotate through the lineup here.
I'm going to share with you the committee's last two portions. This one is the failure to report theft or loss of a firearm. Firearm registration laws vary from state to state across the country. Under Oregon law, when purchasing a gun from a dealer or at a gun show, dealers must do each of the following. 1, see identification. 2, obtain a fingerprint. And 3, do a criminal background check. This information is only recorded for the first purchase of a firearm from a registered gun dealer. There is no waiting period to buy a gun in Oregon, no limit to the number of guns you can buy or own, and there is no registration. Once a firearm is privately owned, background checks are optional. Additionally, Oregon does not have straw purchase laws, which prohibit a person from buying a gun for a felon. To address the problems associated with not being able to track guns in our community when they are stolen or lost and used in crimes, Portland City Council passed the failure to report theft or loss of firearm portion of the illegal gun ordinance. If a firearm gets into the wrong hands, either through loss or theft, Oregon has no expectation for tracking that firearm through its continued existence. It is important for law enforcement to be able to identify this history of a gun once it is recovered from a criminal so that, 1, the firearm can be returned to its rightful owner, and 2, Portland Police Bureau personnel can examine trends associated with the firearms in our community. The failure to report theft or loss of a firearm portion of this ordinance requires that a gun owner report to the police bureau when he has lost a firearm or has been the victim of a theft. In the report, the owner is required to supply the serial number of each stolen or lost firearm. There are fines associated with the failure to report a loss or theft, as well as the failure to report the serial numbers. City Council passed this legislation with the expectation that gun owners should track the serial numbers of their firearms. To date, this legislation has yielded the following results. In 2012, 360 stolen firearms were reported, of which 176 serial numbers were provided. In 2013 through July, 154 stolen firearms were reported, of which 70 serial numbers were provided. The committee agrees with the intention of this legislation and emphasizes that an improved method for tracking guns would be beneficial. However, public education regarding this new requirement and the associated fines could be improved as well. The committee is aware of the release of information about this legislation to the public following the adoption of this ordinance in late 2010. However, the message about this specific requirement and the associated fines may have been lost in the broader message about the new gun crime legislation in the city. Without a more thorough education campaign, Portlanders may feel that they have not been made fully aware of the consequences of not recording the serial numbers for their firearms. A more comprehensive campaign would serve us all well. An effective education campaign would have some or all of the following elements: public service announcements, announcements through neighborhood association meetings and Office of Neighborhood Involvement Networks, creating a flyer for distribution, both electronic and hard copies, send out along with the water bills, distribute at shooting ranges, gun clubs, trade shows, flyers in stores that sell guns, and make sure that Portland store managers know that the ordinance exists, educate insurance companies, National Night Out, schools, libraries, to name a few. The committee recommendations in this area: one, for the successful implementation of the failure to report theft or loss of a firearm portion of this ordinance, citizens must know about the fines associated with the requirement within the legislation and associated penalties for violating this new city code. City Council should therefore engage in a more comprehensive education campaign regarding the new requirements and the fines associated with failing to adhere to City Code Section 14A-60050. In discussing this issue, the committee assessed the root problem at hand in order to assess other potential solutions. What our community really needs is a way to track guns back to their owners so that our public safety system can prosecute the people who burglarized community members, even if the suspect is not caught for that specific burglary. The committee explored the option of a voluntary registration for gun owners, and while it is illegal in Oregon to force registration of firearm ownership, Portland City Council could provide a voluntary registry to community members who want to track serial numbers and other information about their firearms. The committee will also continue to explore potential changes to state laws that prohibit a mandatory registration on every sale of a gun. Two, the City of Portland should explore a voluntary registration for gun owners. Additionally, Portland police officers have an opportunity to support the success of the legislation to a greater degree by investigating the origins of the guns used in crimes that they respond to. And three, through borough-wide implementation, Portland Police Bureau officers must be trained to always ask suspects involved in a gun crime about the gun in question. Moving to the fourth area of the ordinance, the possession of a loaded firearm in a public place. The Police Bureau reports that the implementation of this additional charge in city code is most helpful when police cannot establish other charges for an individual based on evidence at hand but suspect him of greater crimes. The misdemeanor charge helps to build up a criminal history demonstrating a person's course of conduct. This misdemeanor charge has also been used as leverage to ensure a plea deal on more serious charges, including felonies. Ultimately, the multiple misdemeanor convictions demonstrate a pattern of criminal behavior that supports convictions of more serious crimes when committed. The committee assessment, based on this anecdotal evidence, the committee assessed that this portion of the ordinance appears to be working as intended and helps to ensure that those intent on committing gun crimes are effectively criminalized for their behavior. Additional recommendations: number one, The Gun Task Force and Gang Enforcement Team in Portland Police Bureau are the divisions within the Bureau that arguably have the highest impact on the most serious violent crime in our community. Much violent crime in Portland stems from gang-related shootings and stabbings, and the gang, GTF and the GET, respond to those crimes specifically with partnered prevention, collaborative intervention, and targeted enforcement. The success of the illegal gun ordinance, as well as the city's efforts to make our city safer for all, relies on the work of these divisions and their partners. City Council should commit to continued funding for the Portland Police Bureau's Gang Enforcement Team and the Gun Task Force to ensure continued or improved implementation of this ordinance. In conclusion, the Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee strongly recommends that the City of Portland and the Portland Police Bureau continue to work toward the fair and the equitable implementation and enforcement of the City of Portland 2010 Illegal Gun Ordinance, and we will report back to City Council in 2014. The last phase of our presentation to you is a question and answer time, and we've invited support staff to join us in that time.
Great. So first, thank you. Questions for these volunteers. Thank you for your service.
Question.
Mr. Fish.
Thank you very much for an excellent report. Chad, I'm trying to link up a couple of documents, so I'm going to ask for your help. So in the packet of materials we have in Exhibit C, you have the 2010 census data. You see that? It's toward the end of the packet before you get to the financial impact.
Yes.
So it shows that African Americans are about 7.6% of the city's population. on page 12 of the report, you have the statistics on gang membership by racial category. And you have about 55% African American. If you add Latino, you get up to 85%. So then on page 13, at the top of the page, it says the committee reflected upon the following information. And there's a piece of data here that I find alarming, but it's a little buried in the report. It says offenders in gun crimes in Portland in 2013 were roughly 30% of, victims of gun crimes in Portland. So 29% as offenders, 25% as victims. Is that correct?
Correct.
So according to this report, about a quarter of all victims in our community were African American. The census numbers are it's about 7.6% of the population. So significantly above the percentage of the population, we have victims of gun violence. But what I can't track is page 13. You say 25%. Are victims of gun crimes, but in Exhibit C, where it says the race of persons victimized, the percentages are higher. So, and there's obviously a reason why they don't correspond. Because you have 39% African Americans victims involving aggravated assault or attempted murder. So the number is significantly larger, but you might be looking at a different subset.
Yeah.
Am I missing something on that?
Well, Commissioner, actually, I think we have Rob Jackson in the room, who's a statistician working at the Police Bureau. I might defer to him for some of the hard numbers. We tried to get as much data through 2013 as we could, going up through July 31st. So I, on the second panel, he could
And I think just
that.
To clarify this, I thought the figure of 25% of victims where African American was alarming. When I look at Exhibit C for 2013, it appears that in at least the area of aggravated assault or attempted murder with a gun, it spikes to almost 40%. And that's pretty alarming, and it's one of the data points that jumped out at me. So if we could just have some explanation of how we reconcile those two figures.
Okay. Sure.
Other questions for committee members, and then we'll maybe get you to surrender your chairs and bring up our resource people. So,
One question. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On another statistical question. On pages 12, 13, you say that 83% of the exclusions are of African America.